Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues,
and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast. I'm Dave Etler, and I'm here with medical students, David Jansen, Lindsay Naik. Welcome to the show. You can talk.
Thanks.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Right. Back recently from a medical mission to Guatemala, right?
That's right.
How recently?
We were gone all of February, so we got back about a month ago.
Also with me are Dr. David Swanson, clinical assistant professor in the Department of Anesthesia at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and the faculty director of our own Phlox learning community here at the college.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. And Dr. John Kennedy is here, too. He is a former professor in the Department of Otolaryngology, and currently he's the sort of leader, mentor, guru of the Miles of Smiles team Cleft Palate Medical Mission, an annual trip.
Annual trip to
Guatemala to help out some folks there. Start off by telling us a little bit about this medical mission.
Well, we've had 10 years, which is a remarkable accomplishment in this line of effort. We've gone to Guatemala. This was our 10th year. We started off going between two different towns and have, as of late, focused on Huehuetenango, which is a town in northwest Guatemala that we've worked with local physicians there, local oral surgeons there. And we work in a hospital there that we have taken supplies and donations to and really has become, I think, very well outfitted. So we've had a great effort both here locally, but a great partnership in country there, too.
Was it easy to start this up? I mean, did you just go, hey, I'm going to go to Guatemala and we're going to do some cleft palate repair, and everybody was like happy to see you? Or did you have to work with the local population? How does that work?
So, interesting question. One of my favorite quotes is a Japanese quote that roughly translated says, beginning is easy, continuing is hard. Mm-hmm. And that seems to apply widely to a lot of different efforts. I think it applies to this trip. It's easier to start it because there's a lot of enthusiasm. I think what becomes a challenge over a decade is to keep the ball rolling and to keep people excited about it. I think one of the real advantages we've had in that respect is the ongoing influx of medical students every year, as well as residents from the anesthesia department. So it's not the same crew every year. There's people that have gone on many trips, but it's certainly not exclusionary, and we're always looking to include different people on the trip.
So if you were looking for the perfect medical student, I mean will you take anybody who's interested? Are you interested in knowing a little bit about what their goals are? How does that work?
I think enthusiasm is the number one attribute. I think if they have Spanish skills, that's another positive, because it is a very Spanish-speaking environment. Ideally, you know, if we get two medical students to go and one is more of a family practice, pediatric type of pre- and post-op care oriented medical student, that they can help out on the floor and take care of the kids pre- and post-op and get a lot of responsibility there. And if somebody else is more surgical, ER type of oriented, procedurally oriented, you know, they're back in the OR first assisting on cases and helping out in the OR. But we really try to make it a diverse experience for everybody that goes. So there's not set assigned roles like that. And we've, over the years, we've had probably every combination of medical student interest you can imagine.
I assume that dovetails well with y'all's experience down there. Lindsay, what was it like sort of putting yourself in this environment and doing this this important thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess in one word, it was amazing, obviously, going down there. I've been interested in global health work for a while, but I'd never been in a cleft lip and palate mission. So this was something new to me to get to experience, you know, how does an OR work in global health work in a different country and, you know, pre and post-op and different things. And I think this was a great experience because I also got to work with a bunch of University of Iowa physicians and other people who are willing to teach and help out medical students. And I'm going into pediatrics, so obviously all ped stuff really interested me. But I also liked learning about everything. I spent a day in anesthesia, you know, practicing intubations, practicing IV placement. I got to spend time with the dentist, which as a fourth year medical student, I'd never spent time with any dentist.
Yeah.
Hardly even my own dentist. I don't like to spend time there.
How'd you like pulling teeth?
Pulling teeth, I have a new appreciation for the horrible work that dentists have to do pulling those rotten teeth. And actually just this week in my pediatric clinic, I've been pushing brushing your teeth a lot.
David, what about you? Were there any surprises that you, were there any things that you were surprised about once you got down there, or
you know,
what were your expectations going down there, and what were you surprised at? I guess that would be a better question.
Yeah, that is a better question.
Thank you. I try.
I think my expectations were just, I guess I didn't have a lot of expectations. I knew we were going to help a lot of people, and I wanted to help however possible. I just, you know, I didn't know how much I'd be allowed to do, and kind of as an outsider, knowing that this was the 10th year, I didn't know how included I would be, or you know, how excited people would be to have me there. But I was so surprised. I felt like I was, you know, part of the team almost immediately. Everyone was very welcoming. I'm going into family medicine, so I'm someone that likes to do a little bit of everything, and I'm very hands-on, kind of procedure-minded. So I guess I really appreciated that I didn't have a lot of the restrictions that I have here. You know, if I wanted to go hang out in the post-care unit and, you know, talk to parents or help with the kids there, I could. If I wanted to go in the OR for a while, that was fine too. You know, I could just help out wherever help was needed and then go pursue educational opportunities, which isn't always the case here on some of our clerkships with, you know, all the different things that you're supposed to get in by the time you're done.
Tell us a little bit about Guatemala. I mean, what's the country like? I mean, I know that it's not a rich country, at least for the people who, you know, the population there, for instance. So I imagine that has some challenges. What's it like to be a citizen there, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start for briefly. It's a beautiful country, first of all. I mean, the Huehuetenango, the city we go to, is about a 5 or 6 hour bus ride from Guatemala City, the main city that we fly into. And it really is a beautiful, we take a bus and drive up there. It's a beautiful drive. It's mountainous, incredible vistas, incredible views, drive up into the clouds, drive up above the clouds to get over the mountain passes to get to Huehuetenango. I think, I think the people there lead very difficult lives. I think there's a lot of poverty. There's just a lot of survival really going on. They, they coming to the clinic is a tremendous undertaking for many of them. And it's, you know, it's very moving experience when you see parents with their child that have a cleft or other sort of issue. And it may be their one lifetime shot to get something done with that, because just getting together enough money to even go on one of the local buses or walking in a lot of cases to the clinic is a major undertaking. But, you know, what were your guys' impressions when you were there?
I thought it was, I feel like Guatemala is kind of a country of extremes on both ends, very diverse. You know, geographically, it's about the size of one of our states. And yet there's 26 different languages that are spoken. It's a land of volcanoes and fire and water. You see very wealthy people, and but you also see incredibly impoverished people living just miles away. You could take a short bus and see, go from these beautiful houses to people, you know, with literal dirt floors, literally living outside, and they all take the same bus and they all go to the same markets and buy things. And it's just incredible to see that variety.
No, definitely. And David and I had a unique experience as well, because we stayed with a host family kind of in their middle class. And the middle class does exist, although, as David's right, there are the extremes. So it was kind of nice being accepted into the host family and, you know, becoming part of their family. Everybody there was so caring. And we took Spanish language while we were down there. So to talk on the Spanish side, one of my favorite things about Guatemala is I could understand everyone's Spanish. Traveling to other countries, there's a lot of thick accents that are sometimes a little bit difficult to understand. But I thought that was great. And as well as, you know, just the countryside, I was way more impressed with the beauty and, you know, climbing mountains and seeing, you know, active volcanoes as well as climbing the inactive ones and just all the different things we could do while we were there.
One of the things I've been very impressed with is the simplicity that the Guatemalans live with and appreciate. They seem to be very happy. I would say more happy perhaps than people in the States, I think, leading very simple lives. It is a hard life, but it's made me appreciate maybe a little bit more the simple things in life. From a physical standpoint, we've talked a little bit about the volcanoes, and I thought it was very cool. Within hours after our bus went past Fuego volcano, it erupted, and there's very cool images of that. Kind of a story contrasting here and there. Paco is our Guatemalan guide in the beginning and now kind of the integral coordinating member, and his wife and daughters had to clean up all the ash that ended up on his house, and I'm thinking what a terrible thing that would be to do. And he said, well, you guys have all the snow to shovel. It's the same. We have a little bit different troubles, but similar kind of problems.
The volcano shut down the airport though.
Yeah, they do that. Can you help everybody who comes to visit you? How do you decide?
No, and that's really the toughest part is, you know, I've been to over the years, because I've done this for a long time besides Iowa most, and every trip I've ever been on, we've never been able to take care of everybody that showed up for screening. Sometimes the kids show up and they're sick. They're too sick to have surgery. Sometimes they show up with things that we're just not equipped to take care of there. And sometimes they show up either late in the mission cycle, you know, one of the last days, and our OR schedule's already full. And it's, you know, we try to make accommodation. We try to put them at the head of the list next year if they'll come back. We had a great story this year of, you know, one of the kids came back, and last year I had given them a business card, and signed it on the back and said, you know, seen in 2014 should be number one in 15. I told mom to, you know, bring this card back, and it's a ticket to the front of the line. And just kind of in the weird way that, you know, the world works sometimes, here she shows up a year later with this card in hand, and, you know, he went to that was the deal. And he got on the schedule and got done. But you kind of wonder where that card was in the year in between. You know, I don't imagine it on a refrigerator magnet on the refrigerator. I think it was tucked in somewhere, but, you know, she kept it for a year.
This is the largest economy in Central America, and what David was saying before about the sort of divide between the rich and poor, it's pretty striking. The population is among the poorest in Latin America, mm-hmm. And according to what I've read, you know, more than half the population is living in poverty. Quarter of the population is illiterate. Has among the highest infant mortality rates and one of the lowest in terms of life expectancy at birth. So what are the challenges of working with that? I mean, is that the population you see?
I mean, we see a cross-section of the population. I mean, we don't see 100% destitute poverty.
Okay.
But we see a majority of people are people that can't afford, you know, regular health care in any sense of that word. So, you know, not only the cleft work that we do, but as Lindsay talked about, the dental care and some of the other just general pediatric care that the pediatricians on the trip provide is a real, you know, it's a real bonus for these folks, because it's not like they go to the doctor every year or every 6 months. They, you know, this is a unique experience for many of them, even for just the most basic of care.
Are the local medical providers not able to do cleft palate repair? I mean, is this why you go there?
There's nobody in, I mean, that's the reason we originally selected Weiwei, is there are no surgical specialists trained to do cleft repair in that town or in that area. And, you know, over the years when we've been there, it's been reflected in the patients we've seen. We've seen a number of adults there that had unrepaired clefts. The oldest cleft lip we've repaired there was a gentleman in his 80s. So, you know, hard to imagine that people live on the same planet we do, and we've got all the problems we think we have, but you can get to be 80 years old and still not even get your cleft lip repaired. So, as Dave said earlier, it really, I think for me, it helps put things in perspective once a year, and that's probably a good thing.
And it was very cool to see how excited that 80-year-old guy was to get his cleft fixed.
Yeah.
Even at that age, it really is going to change his life, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware that there was such a range of ages. I sort of imagined it all being kids, but...
Well, I think it reflects just the accessibility of care and the availability of care that, you know, these people have reached adulthood without ever bumping into anybody that was, you know, equipped or trained to take care of the issue they had.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a second on the Short Code Podcast.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
We're back on the Short Code Podcast. Dr. Kennedy, can you talk a little bit about the ethical issues that surround these types of short-term medical missions?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And, you know, there's certainly differing philosophies on that. I think in an ideal world, you would set up long-term sustainable medical and surgical care for people in, you know, in all the areas that you could. I think the reality of things are, at least as it exists today, that in a lot of places, for a number of different reasons, that's just a very difficult task. I think, you know, at the end of the mission, when you look back, you realize that although these kids probably did not get the same ongoing team care that they got, they would get in the U.S. on a regular basis, they got their cleft lip fixed, or they got their cleft palate fixed. And absent, you know, our team being there, it's unlikely that would have happened. And the evidence of that is in what we talked about before, in the adult population running around with unrepaired clefts. So I think, you know, the pathway to excellence has a rest stop labeled good. And I think that right now what we're trying to provide is a good, solid level of care for them. We've partnered with people locally there, so it's not just that we're there for 10 days and gone. We have, you know, a pediatrician that looks at the kids before the mission and after the mission. We've equipped the hospital to be able to care for a wide variety of things, even when we're not there, in terms of equipment in the operating room and other surgical autoclaves, you know, necessary hospital equipment, defibrillators, pulse oximeters. So I think I agree everyone should get the best care possible, and that's what we're trying to do in this mission. With the resources we have and the opportunity we have here, we're trying to provide the best care we can possible. Is it perfect? It's not perfect, but it's, you know, perfect is a goal to strive for. And so I think we've seen over our evolution for 10 years that the services we provided have expanded and become more comprehensive. So we're on the path.
I think one ethical issue that can come up with kind of short-term missions is you go in and you do a bunch of stuff and then you leave and then no one knows what happens. But I could see that was different with this most trip because, you know, this is their 10th year of going. And, you know, on the first day at the screening clinic, I was surprised how many of the patients were already known to so many members of the team because they'd seen them year after year. And a lot of families and patients, you know, maybe they got one surgery this time and they know that they're going to need another surgery for things to be fine, or, you know, as their mouth grows, it's going to require another one. And they would ask me when they were leaving, will you be back next year? Can we come back next year? And I said, you know, God willing, we'll be back next year for you. So come back. And I think that that's unique and you don't see that in a lot of short-term missions.
I agree. Although this is technically a short-term mission, to me, it feels like a long-term mission because we've come back every year, year after year. I was very impressed by the number of revisions and people returning because I've gone on some short-term, you know, primary care missions before, and those I did leave wondering, you know, did the vitamins I give, how long is that going to help, or the antibiotics that I gave this one time dose, who's going to follow up with them afterwards? But something with like a cleft lip and palate repair, you know, you don't need to do surgeries every 6 months anyway. So I feel like, you know, coming back yearly, and some people even came back just to be checked up on, they didn't need a surgery, and we gave them their blessing and said, you know, this is still looking good, we don't think you need surgery yet, keep coming back because maybe in 5 more years you might. So to me, you know, I didn't have many ethical dilemmas coming away from this. I felt really satisfied that we did great care for all of our patients.
Along with what Lindsay said, my wife and brother-in-law went to down to New Orleans area after Katrina, and both felt a little bit, you know, unsure how much good their time did for people. As far as the most mission, and I think plastic surgery in general is set up pretty good be able to do, you know, a 1 week mission a year. And I think it's great as far as continuity to be able to go back year after year for a decade. And the real key thing, I think, is having somebody in the area to be able to follow up with the patients. Right. And I think that's what separates a good mission from a great mission that I think most has become if it wasn't right off the bat. And that really is key to have someone who's there who can, you know, optimize the patient's pre-op if, you know, if that's a possibility, and to be able to follow up afterwards. I think it's very much a disservice to patients to, you know, go in, as I think you're alluding to, you know, go into a place, operate, leave, have no arrangement for any sort of follow-up care.
Yeah, and we've really tried to, not only within the medical community, but the, you know, the community at large, through a Rotary partnership. We've got sponsorship through the Rotary Club here in Iowa, actually in the what's called the District 6000, has been a big sponsor for us in Iowa. But we also have developed a decade-long relationship with the local Rotary Club down there. And as you know, those are oftentimes business leaders or community leaders. And so, you know, we have their full support and effort year-round in terms of identifying patients. And they contribute and facilitate the patient's travel to come in and are just outstanding partners. So we've really tried over the years we've been there to link up not only with the medical community, but the, you know, the community at large in that area through the Rotary.
Did you find building the necessary relationships with the local medical providers easy, difficult? I mean, how did that work?
I think it was relatively easy. That probably the most interesting story about putting this all together, when we started to do it, I asked some people that had been doing this for a long time, you know, what the biggest challenges would be. And the best advice I got was, you know, you think that when you show up, people are going to lay rose petals at your feet and be happy that, you know, you're walking, they'll have a parade in the streets and all of that. And really what kind of happens is, you know, the first year or two, they kind of look at you like, why are you actually here? And then, are you really going to come back? And
there's some suspicion that you have to deal with.
Yeah, I think that's just a little bit of basic human nature. And certainly not to take anything away from, the people we partner with down there. But I think a little bit, whenever anybody shows up and says, we're here to help you, you know, people kind of look at that and think, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, the magic time, and I was forewarned of this, really when we hit 5 years there, it was very apparent to everybody involved in the equation that we had been there, we were coming back, and, you know, as long as they wanted us there, we weren't going away. And that's really when the magic started to happen. That's when there stopped being, you know, Guatemalans and North Americans on the trip, and it was just one trip. And so I think the lesson there is if you start off to do something like this, you've got to give it time to mature. And there really is no substitute for continuous effort over a period of time.
It's been very cool to see the relationship building, especially between the Rotary groups here and there. And the interesting thing I see in those relationships, it seemed like there was a little bit of, you know, you're in my space when we were at the public hospitals. And it just blew my mind that several Rotarians own a hospital and they are giving us their hospital for the week now. They've got two ORs and we're using them for the week. And I just can't believe that they're willing to do that. And I think the feeling is mutual that they're, you know, amazed that we're willing to come there every year and take care of the Guatemalan kids.
Yeah.
I understand there's some sort of scholarship for this for students. Is that right? Did you guys take advantage of that?
We always take advantage of scholarships.
Yeah,
is that a real question?
Yeah.
Well, actually, we were pretty lucky. We did get a scholarship through kind of the Most Rotary Foundation, but then Robin also was great in pushing more scholarships our way, saying, you know, I think you guys would be a great candidates for the IMS scholarship as well. You should apply for this also. So, you know, it really didn't feel like a financial burden for us, which in a very financially burdening fourth year is a great thing when we're traveling around the country for interviews. So knowing that we had some help with global rotations was wonderful.
I bet a nice trip to Guatemala to help out some folks might take the take a little bit of the stress out of waiting for your match results.
It was wonderful in February.
I didn't think about it for days at a time.
Me either.
It was really great.
While all of our classmates were crying to each other and freaking out and saying, what are we going to do? David and I climbed a volcano instead. So,
I mean, I was crying on the volcano, but it wasn't about the match.
Yeah,
so.
The ash in your eyes.
The first day there was just incredible. You know, there weren't rose petals, but it was almost that. We come to the front door of the hospital and we knock, and here's the 30 of us coming in, and the entire staff of the hospital is lined up along the hallway giving us a standing ovation as we walk in. And one of the nurses that was new to the team that year made the comment that I'll never forget. She's like, wouldn't that just be awesome at work every day when you get a standing ovation just for showing up?
I do that in my head when I see you, David.
Funny.
Well, thank you so guys so much for coming. If is there any last words anybody wants to throw in here at this point?
No, I just hope that the medical students continue to have this kind of experience, whether it's with Iowa Most or with whatever global medical experience they can have. I think, it gives you a new perspective. It puts your own set of problems in a particular perspective. And I think, I just think it's being good and doing good all at the same time. So I would invite all of them to consider Iowa Most, but even, no pun intended, more globally, consider other opportunities as they can find them.
I can remember it was one of my first days at in Quetzaltenango, what we did the week before the Weiwei trip. And I was like out at this rural area building this safe stove for a woman and her family. And, I was like mixing cement. And all of a sudden I realized just by mixing cement, I had done more good than I had an entire month of shadowing residents on ophthalmology during January. And I just was like, yes, I'm so glad that I made this decision and that I was allowed to come here and count this as, a school credit and a global elective. So
I feel really fortunate that University of Iowa makes it so easy for medical students to go abroad. Talking to other students who were in Guatemala at the same time as us, they were like, I had to take vacation to come on this trip. My school wouldn't let me go. It wasn't counted globally as an elective program. So I would really encourage students to take advantage of it. The University of Iowa does a great job of this. Robin's great at, telling you where to go and what program might be best for you. And if anyone has any questions specifically about Guatemala, the Most trip, other language programs in Guatemala, I'm happy to help out. You can ask for Robin for our emails.
We'd love to talk to you.
And I can even give my post University of Iowa email as well.
And for our listeners, and for our listeners who aren't at Iowa or aren't at the College of Medicine, but are thinking about this sort of thing in the future, feel free to visit us at theshortcoat.com/tell us, and you can send in your questions for these guys, and I can certainly pass along their contact information. I'm sure they'd be happy to talk with you.
And if anyone has questions for me, they can just stop by my office in the Flocks and
there he is.
Learning community and ask away. I think a medical mission is just really, it makes you feel good, and you're doing a lot of good for people, and gives you a really nice perspective, I think, on life.
David, Lindsay, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Kennedy, Jinx. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Swanson, thank you so much for telling us.
Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, thank you. If you like what you heard today on the Short Code Podcast, leave us a review or some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcode.com/tell us. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by the Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.